Welcome to the Brownline Church Podcast. My name is Vince Brackett. I am one of the pastors at Brownline Church. And if you are hearing this, I am on sabbatical right now with my family and away from the community for about 8 weeks of rest and recovery and trying to listen to God in a way that is outside of the weekly responsibilities of normal life. If you are somebody who has given financially to Brownline Church at some point, I am so grateful because it is your donations and gifts that allow our church to function at all and for the financial board to be able to offer me something as wonderful and humanizing as a sabbatical. So thank you. Here's our most recent Sunday message. Let us know what you think in Discord or shooting us an email, brownlinechurch@gmail.com, or share it with a friend if it helps you.
All right, so today we are closing out our summer series on embracing beliefs. Rather than focusing our time on dismantling or deconstructing beliefs that are no longer helpful, which definitely has its place and importance, we have been exploring the good and beautiful beliefs that sustain us. The hope is to encourage one another toward growing hopeful beliefs, deepening the roots of what can offer us joy and something to cling to. So far, we have talked with Teal about beliefs around music, landing on the belief of holding things loosely. We've talked to Brad about the importance of leaning into mystery. And last week we talked with Carol about her belief in God's faithfulness. And today we are going to focus our time on the idea of witness, of holding one another's stories. And we have our last guest of this series. I am so excited to welcome Carrie Stevens to Brownline. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. Carrie, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I am a chaplain at a hospital in the suburbs. I work in both pediatric chaplaincy as well as adult chaplaincy. But beyond that, I identify as queer. I use they, them pronouns. I have a wonderful partner, Phil, who's here with me this morning, and a beautiful, incredibly special hedgehog as a pet. His name is Milo. I studied music and theater in undergrad and did my MDiv at North Park Seminary. Have journeyed most of my life in my faith, but feel like chaplaincy has been a new chapter in kind of my faith journey and my relationship with God.
Yeah. I feel like so much of what we believe is shaped by community. Mm. So could you share a little bit about the faith communities that you've been a part of and how that's shaped you?
Sure. I grew up non-denominational, but charismatic, semi-Pentecostal. So very spirit-led type environment. But as I went to college, I went to North Park and kind of became closely affiliated with the Evangelical Covenant Church, and have attended Resurrection Covenant Church for a while here in the city. And I have found that, you know, as a queer individual in that denomination, things have been a little troubling. So have found myself ever leaning into sort of a more universal background, and really find that I find church and community most in everyday life and the people around me more than I do in a church building most often.
Yeah. That's really helpful. So let's talk more about your role as chaplain.
Yeah.
So how did you decide that you wanted to be a chaplain? Like, what drew you in about chaplaincy?
Yeah, so initially, I was doing chaplaincy as part of a degree requirement for my Master's of Divinity, and wasn't really sure what it was all about. Hadn't really encountered a chaplain in my own life at any point, so was interested to step into it. but sort of the intimate nature of chaplaincy is something that was appealing to me from the beginning, I think. The one-on-one nature and the closeness that comes from that. But I did my one summer internship worth of chaplaincy and fell in love with it and haven't left since. So I think what really kind of sold me on chaplaincy is the ability to really truly bear witness to individuals' lives and to find holiness even in the midst of grief and suffering.
Yeah, maybe let's talk a little bit about grief.
Yeah.
How do you, because you're with people, you're accompanying people in such poignant times in their life and some of the most difficult moments of their life. And so I'm sure grief is just a really common theme that you encounter.
Definitely is. I want to pause because I recognize that when I started chaplaincy, I didn't really know what it was. So in case anybody doesn't really know chaplaincy, I always introduce it to patients and families at the hospital as, you know, the doctors and nurses are here for all the physical stuff. Chaplains are here for kind of the rest of it. We're here for emotional and spiritual support in the midst of their time in the hospital. There are chaplains found in other places too, like military chaplains, prison chaplains, things like that. But my context is the hospital. So certainly I am encountering people on some of the worst days of their lives most often. And so grief is really, really present in lots of ways, right? Grieving new diagnoses, grieving loss of loved ones, or grieving loss of what they thought life was going to be, and it ends up being different than what they anticipated. This year, around Lent, I was asked to write we do a reflection booklet that we hand out to patients and families who are interested. And I was asked to write a reflection on Good Friday, which is all about grief. Mm-hmm. And I feel like what I had to say there kind of really amplifies what I think about grief. And so rather than try to reword it, I'm just going to read you what I wrote. But Good Friday isn't good in the sense that it's like to be celebrated and wonderful, but rather that good is meant to be pious or holy. In this way, the day is no longer about being right or desired or approved, as good might inspire us to think. Instead, good on that day is set apart purely because of the not goodness it holds. An invitation to even the worst parts of us, our sadness, our brokenness, our grief, our failure, to become sanctified and remembered to God. There is holiness found in the deep mourning that days of grief inspire. So I challenge myself each day and a lot of the patients and families I encounter to lean in to the depths of sorrow that grief brings. Fearing not that they will become lost to the grief, because we know what is to come, right? We know what happened on Sunday of Easter weekend. But maybe that there's a piece of goodness that can only be found in the bottom of the pit of sorrow, and that God awaits us there in the profundity of our grief. And so my job as a chaplain when encountering grief is not to make it better, not to try to bring a smile to someone's face or say, oh, yes, that's so sad, but no, it's to sit in the depth of that grief with them and bear witness to it and let them know that they're not alone in it so that they feel safe to sit in the depth of it.
Yeah. It's so, I feel like culturally there's a lot of pressure to rush to the silver lining or making meaning immediately. But when you're thinking about this pattern of death and resurrection that we all experience, I mean, we look to the life of Jesus and that as an example, but it's an ongoing cycle that we experience constantly. And so the knowing that sitting in the sorrow and in the depths of the pit is part of the process, and that the meaning making may come far later than the actual experience. I think there's something about being a chaplain that involves helping people slow down, even though it's super uncomfortable to sit in the pain.
Definitely. Definitely. A lot of times when I walk into rooms, you know, sometimes it's I'm walking into a room where a patient has requested a visit. Sometimes I'm doing cold visits and just rounding on a unit. And so I walk in and will introduce myself and, you know, ask how a patient is doing. And oftentimes it's, I'm doing okay, like had better days, but fine. And then they don't really have a desire to, like, talk more about it. And so oftentimes I'll just sit there and give some silence. And in that moment of pause, people often realize, oh, wait, there is more that I'm feeling and that I could say. And if you're willing to actually sit here mm-hmm. in the silence and wait, then I can be willing to actually engage those thoughts and feelings that are existing in me further.
Yeah, this is bringing to mind, I'm reading right now a book called The Wisdom of Your Body. It's by Hilary McBride. I would highly, highly recommend it. And she talks about, it's mainly a book on embodiment and actually being in tune with your body. Mm-hmm. And when you're experiencing whatever it may be that's causing you pain, that's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. And she also talks about how the emotions that we experience in an embodied way are really difficult. But in one of the chapters, she talks about reframing different emotions. Mm-hmm. It's very inside out kind of themed.
Yes.
But the two that I think are relevant to our conversation are sadness and anger. And the way that she reframes it is saying that anger helps us communicate what we need. And sadness, it signals that we need support, but it also reveals what is meaningful to us. And I had never heard that kind of reframing about sadness, that when we are sad about something, it's revealing what we truly care about. And so I think that goes hand in hand with grief and loss and expectation.
Yeah. I think oftentimes, you know, in conversations with patients, different subjects can become like sticking points where they just get stuck and want to continue to reflect on or think on certain things. And so as a chaplain, I sit there and, you know, wonder what is it about this thing that is holding your attention. And so oftentimes I wonder that aloud and say, you know, what do you think the fact that you're thinking about these things or that this is where your mind is right now, what do you think that reveals about yourself? And what does that say about what you need or what you desire in this moment?
Yeah.
And oftentimes people don't necessarily take the time to think, oh, yeah, this emotion I'm feeling or this thought that I'm stuck on really reveals something about what I need from myself, from my care team, from my loved ones. And even just sitting there and having curiosity mm-hmm. encourages them to think further into that idea.
Yeah. Could you share a story or if there's any or more stories that feel like they represent as a whole your chaplain experience? Like if there's any particular things that you've walked through with patients or things like that that come to mind?
Yeah. You know, there are so many stories, and my partner would tell you that every day when I come home, I have a new story to share with him about some profound moment I've had with a patient. But one that comes to mind at the forefront of the idea of grief really is a patient who was in her 60s. She had been battling cancer for a long time and had come to the point in her journey where she was ready to say, I fought the good fight, I'm ready to finish. And she was about to transition into comfort care, which would mean that we are stopping treatment, but in the sense of trying to get rid of the cancer, but instead are transitioning into measures just to keep her comfortable in the end of her life. And it's rare to encounter in sort of these end of life moments, people who are still fully aware or cognizant of what's going on. And she was, she was still very fully aware. She was making all of her own decisions. And to encounter someone who is so ready to greet the goodness found in going home, knowing that she had fought the good fight, but that there was holiness to be found in saying, I can't do this to my body anymore, to continue to treat it. But she was surrounded by, she had five siblings who were all in the room with her, and they had asked for a chaplain to come pray with them. And there was just such a sacredness in the room, to be able to pray with this family and to hold this space of the end of a life. I think oftentimes we hold new life as really holy and wonderful, and the birth of new life and new children are celebratory moments. But there was something to be celebrated in this end of life moment too, in that the end of this earthly life was greeting her into a new life and a new sense of peace to be found after this life, that was really profound. And just to have a family that was there to fully hold that with her. And there was certainly grief over the fact that they were going to lose their loved one. But just a real sense of peace that was a gift to be part of. And a gift to be welcomed into such an intimate space and an intimate moment with this family. Family that I didn't know at all, but purely wanted someone to bear witness to this moment and to hold with them the profundity of it all, because it was such a challenging but beautiful moment for them that they didn't want to do it alone. They wanted someone else to see and experience with them.
Yeah, what a sacred role to get to accompany people in that. When we were talking this before, this word witness came up, and I would love for you to kind of share more about what it means for you to witness to people's stories and what they're going through.
Yeah. I think oftentimes in a world that is as huge as the world we have, right, that we can feel insignificant, or I specifically have felt insignificant in the world, and have found that having someone do life with you brings meaning in itself. And I think that has been the case in being a chaplain and witnessing to people's lives means, you know, in my very evangelical background, witnessing used to mean to me that, like, I needed to come tell you about Jesus and convert you and all of that stuff. But witnessing to me now means to find the peace of Jesus or the peace of God as a whole that exists in you and your story. And I believe that each person carries a piece of God in them that their once in all eternity self is the only one that carries, right? And so if I walk into someone's story, what is the piece of God that exists only in you that I can see here? And, you know, so I think witnessing means sitting and listening, but sitting in silence, holding space for anything that might come up, but also just being with. And in my chaplaincy education, we talked a lot about being instead of doing. And just being with someone is really meaningful in a hospital situation, especially, I think, because, you know, the nurses and doctors and other caretakers are there to do things. And as much as they can, in some ways, check in with a patient, they can't just be with the patient. And so that's what I get to do. And, you know, I think it allows people to feel seen and to feel less alone and like there is some meaning to their self that can be found because their story is being heard and being witnessed instead of just being a story that's written in a book that no one ever reads.
Yeah. I'm curious how this constant process of being with person after person, family after family. It's a really unique role, and I'm curious what this has revealed to you about God and God's nature.
Yeah. Well, I think it continues to reveal to me the depth and expansiveness of God, in that there is something unique that I find in each encounter. While certain stories certainly resemble others and things like that, there's a uniqueness found in each family story and each person's story that I think really continues to reveal to me just how big and broad and expansive God is, because God encompasses all of these stories and all of these people. And so often in my faith traditions, I feel like I've put God in a box. And so this continues to like break down that box and say, well, no, maybe God is these tears that this person is shedding. Maybe God is the feeling of loss. Maybe God is the joy that's found in the midst of these moments, or in the joke that we can make even in the midst of grief, right? Like, maybe God is all of those things. And I think, you know, it reveals to me also kind of the creative nature of God, that that there are so many stories to be told, that none of them resemble each other exactly. Inspires a sense of creativity in myself and how I respond to things, just because I recognize like how crazy it is that God, as the author of these lives, could continue to write different stories for each person. And if all of these different stories can exist, then a wide variety of responses certainly can exist too. And that there's just so much to be learned because each story is different.
Yeah, it's beautiful to think about, just as you're encountering more and more stories, getting to add more and more to your understanding of God. Like, I love that expansiveness, because I think sometimes we get lost in the nitty-gritty of trying to figure out, like, what do we believe? What is God doing here?
Right.
And sometimes the idea of mystery, which we've talked about in this series, but sometimes that can feel like a dissatisfactory solution of, like, oh, we don't know. But then there's also the beauty of, like, oh, we don't know. Like, this can draw us in deeper and more and more into our relationships, because so much of the like person-to-person encounter and grounded in physical experiences, that helps teach us more and more about what's beyond us too.
Yeah. I feel like at a certain point when I was in regular church all the time and like thought I knew all there was to know about God, faith became boring and wasn't as engaging, and or like blocked out certain people in the narrative. If I know who God is and I know what God wants, then I know that God doesn't want XYZ in people or in their behaviors or things like that. But when I kind of stepped aside from that and stepped into chaplaincy, as well as kind of my own journey as a queer person and trying to find theology that supported my identity, I have found that their faith and relationship with God has just become so much more joyful and engaging, because I have a desire to seek God in all things and all people that I didn't used to have. And so, you know, as a chaplain, I'm working with people who are from all different faith backgrounds, not just people who are Christian. And so to encounter their faith and how it continues to save them or provide support or stability in the midst of these crazy hard moments encourages me to find something worthy and wonderful about their faith that I can incorporate into mine in some way. And very few people in the space of the hospital are referencing their religious texts, right? They're referencing sort of the intimacy they have with God or with their faith. And there's just something really unifying and beautiful about this, like, this Muslim person doesn't care that I'm a Christian chaplain. They recognize that I identify and resonate with the sacred. Mm. And so it doesn't matter if our beliefs are the same or if we agree on this theology or this idea, right? Like, what matters is that we both recognize the sacred in this space and can experience that together and witness the change it causes in us to acknowledge the sacred in the room instead of just keeping things kind of this surface level experience.
Yeah, I feel like that breaks out of the compartmentalizing that could take place of this very physical experience of pain and loss and disappointment. Mm-hmm. You could stay in a mental space about that, and it could be tempting to like disengage from the body and disengage from thinking of things as sacred. Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious how holding this, the sacredness and this grief and pain, like how do you hold all of that?
You know, I think that there is something unique about each of us that God calls us into certain things because of who we are. And I think that throughout my entire life, I've recognized this sense of melancholy within myself that for a while I resented, but now I have come to see as this really wonderful gift that God has given me that allows me to lean into this kind of continual, perpetual grief that I experience at the hospital. Because this melancholy nature has always encouraged me to see the things worth mourning, even within the beautiful things. And while that can be challenging at times and can sometimes make me seem like a little bit of a Debbie Downer, recognizing that like, oh yes, this is beautiful, or like, this flower is so wonderful, but it's only gonna bloom for a week, right? And like, that is where my mind is all the time. Mm-hmm. But that works on the flip too, of saying like, there is so much grief, but my nature helps me to also identify the beauty in the grief. And so I think kind of my whole life has been preparing me to continue to sit in the really tough moments with people, because I have learned to sit in the really tough moments in my own life and not run from them. I have become equipped to do that with other people. And so it doesn't seem so heavy to carry all this grief, because my soul is already profoundly aware of the depth of grief that exists. And so while each person's story is different and unique, this sort of monumental sense of grief is universal in some ways, and is something that I have become really accustomed to searching out, because I do feel equipped to sit in that hardship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for many of us, even as we're carrying our own difficulties and our own struggles, when we have a loved one, someone close to us, someone even that we just know on the peripheral, it can be hard to manage carrying so many other stories and so much else beyond ourselves when we have personal things that are going on too. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you have any practices or any advice for how to kind of manage the carrying all those stories and dealing with your own personal struggles.
Yeah. So I have the gift of my partner, Phil, who oftentimes is the one to drive me to and from work. And he is a safe place for me to kind of, within the rules of confidentiality, of course, kind of dump the stories that I've acquired during the day, to share the moments that were particularly hard, but also to share the moments that were particularly beautiful. You know, like the other day I encountered a 9-month-old baby who had spinal surgery, and so she couldn't turn to look at me when I was talking. She was in her mom's arms looking at her mom, but I was over here talking. And, you know, she couldn't turn to look at me. And so I stepped forward and kind of leaned over so she could see me. And when she saw the face associated with the sound, her face just lit up. And she had this huge smile that was just like so tender and wonderful. And that was the first thing I shared in the car with Phil on the way home that day. It was like, oh, yes, I know that this is awful, that she had to have spinal surgery and she's not done with all of this and she's pursuing more care and whatnot. But like this moment of pure joy when she was able to see the face that came with the sound that entered the room was just like really wonderful. And so I think for me, it's become important to share not only the really hard stuff I encounter at work, but the joyful moments, and to compartmentalize that to the time we spend in the car. That when we get home and get out of the car, I can leave work and the story is there. And there's something really refreshing too about being in a hospital where we have 24-hour chaplaincy care. Means that when I clock out, there is always someone else clocking in. And what a gift and good reminder that is, that like none of this work is meant to be done alone.
Yeah.
And that it is not all mine to carry, right? That God is carrying it all, but also that God has inserted other people to help carry it. And so that when I go home, I don't have to worry about the patients I saw that day and if they're going to get the care they need, because I can trust that my colleagues are there to continue following up if they need further care. And so I think that has allowed me to say, okay, I can go home and deal with my own grief or my own joy or my own things and feel it fully. And it encourages me to desire having people in my life that bear witness in the way that I get to bear witness to the patients and whatnot, to have those people in my life too. And so I think I've really leaned into relationships in a way that I hadn't for a while, just because I recognize that like the depth of life is experienced more when someone witnesses it with you. And whether that's Phil or family or friends or whatever, that there is more meaning and more impact to each moment life has when I welcome other people into it with me.
Yeah, it's just such a good reminder that this is all communal. It's a ripple effect. You have something happening in a really powerful way, but then you have the way that expands beyond just that person experiencing something.
Yeah.
And how beautiful that you get to be a part of it, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
That you're just this moment. And it's not to diminish the power of those moments, but it's a piece of the bigger picture. And that you get to join in the really just the patient and loving flow of God that is taking place, that you are not the bringer of peace and comfort like on your own.
Yeah.
That you just get to be a piece of that. And I think that for all of us who are not in chaplain roles but are carrying stories beyond ourselves, it's just a humbling and comforting thing to recognize like I am just a piece of the greater picture. Mm-hmm. My stories are woven into other people's stories and we don't experience this all alone.
Yeah. In sharing some of my hospital stories and whatnot with my mom, you know, she's like, oh, I'll be praying for that family. And then she'll check in with me a day or two later and go, okay, how is so-and-so doing? Like, are they improving? Are they declining? How can I be praying? And I'll be like, oh, well, actually, I don't know. Like, because my job as a chaplain is sort of so transient in these people's lives, like beyond the exact chapter and moment I'm in with them, I don't get to know the rest of the story.
Yeah.
And so my mom's like, isn't that so hard that you don't get to know what happens next? And I was like, yeah, but it also is really freeing and really a gift too, that like we have this really profound and intimate, intense moment with one another. But then life continues on or maybe their story ends, but you know, these different moments and the fullness of their life is not mine to carry.
Yeah.
But this one particular chapter I can carry with them. And so it's freeing to think that not all relationships are meant to span our entire story. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That you can share really wonderful brief chapters with people, as well as have people who are there for all of the chapters. But the gift that can be to say, let's lean in and live into this so fully for the moment we have, and then let it go and let the next person step in, and makes me think of the world and people around me differently, because it's like, oh, I don't know you and I may never see you again, but there is still a richness that can be found in the interaction we have with one another.
Yeah, this reminds me of, I remember this pre-pandemic, super snowy, slushy night, I went to a church downtown to listen to Nadia Boltz-Weber speak. She's a writer and theologian that I look to often. And she was sharing a story about a friend of hers who's a chaplain. And people would ask her, like, how do you do this work? How do you carry all of this? And this friend shared an image that she imagines her heart right up against the heart of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so the stories and the pain and the experiences flow through her. She allows herself to fully experience that, to have the emotions mm-hmm. that come along with it, to let that impact her and move her and teach her things about the divine and all people and about yeah. God. But that because her heart is right up against the heart of Jesus, she is not the landing place. Mm-hmm. It goes through her and lands there. And how beautiful to think of this expansive God that can hold far more than what we can hold.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that image. Carry that with me.
Yeah. Well, I would love if we could get settled a little bit and take some deep breaths, and if you could pray for us as we close.
Something I acknowledge in the hospital is oftentimes that patients can be devoid of touch. And so if touch is something that is grounding for you, I would encourage you, with the consent of the people around you, to place a hand on each other's hands or an arm around each other, as touch can be so grounding and remind us of our embodied selves when we need that most. So if that's something that is good for you, I would invite you into that as well. Can I?
Thanks.
Dear God, thank you for bringing us together today. Lord, I know each person here brings their own story that you already know each chapter of, but that we are unraveling as we go. And Lord, I thank you that you're a God who journeys with us through the stories, not a God that just watches from above, but a God that can be found in each and every moment. And so wherever each person here is in their story today, I pray that you would make the signs of your love so very evident for them, and that they would find your love and your presence in hearing the stories of each other as well. I pray that you would invite them into encounters where they could bear witness to the lives of others and allow others to bear witness to their moments too. God, I pray that in carrying one another's stories, they would find a sense of holiness and sacred, a sense of the sacred that exists truly, because you have put yourself in each of our stories. God, I thank you for the gift it is to be a chaplain, and I pray that each person here would be gifted with something that brings them so much joy, as chaplaincy brings me. That each person would find that thing about them that that maybe has at points in their lives been a sticking point, like my melancholiness has been, but that at some point you would open their stories to reveal that uniqueness is part of what they were created for, that is something they should lean into. God, I thank you for who you've made each of us to be, for all that you're doing in us and through us and around us in the world, even in the midst of our hardest moments.
God, I pray that you would go with each of us from this place today, and that you would just bring a sense of encouragement and love to our hearts, and that you would help each of us to feel the permission to lean into the depth of each experience and each emotion that we have. I thank you for who you are and all that you do. In your holy name we pray. Amen.